This is the EWN Radio Network.
She's smart. She's successful. She's an executive. She's an entrepreneur. And she's the chief executive of her story. Who is she? She's you. Welcome to the Power Lunch on EWN Radio Network. Your Power Lunch Hour, keeping you informed of women in the headlines and making their own news. And now here's your host, Mona Lisa Como.
Hey, 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 welcome back to the Power Lunch. I'm your host, Mona Lisa Como. We are part of the EWN Radio Network on Blog Talk Radio, sponsored by Inter Pares Capital, your one stop for all your business financing needs. Welcome back. It's the first week of December, and it's also, for those of you who are Jewish friends, Happy Hanukkah. Lucky you folks, you get 8 days to celebrate. For me, it's exactly 2 weeks till Christmas, folks, and there's a lot of news to sift through this week. It was a jam-packed week, as it is always this time of year. Were you able to keep up with all the news? I was, and actually a little tired of the news. I don't think I can remember social media being filled with so much negativity. And in fairness, there is a lot of bad things going on in the world. If one thing is for certain, though, Trump is surely getting a lot of airtime, as is terrorism and the presidential candidates. But wouldn't it be nice to see something good around the world being in our airwaves? I think you think so. I think you agree with me. So we're going to put you to the challenge, folks, and to all our listeners. Let's see if we can fill our social media pages with some good stories, especially given it's the holiday season. There are great stories out there, hard to tell, but they are out there. So share them with us. We will share them with everyone else as well. Let us know what your ideas are. You can send it to us on Twitter, at Mona Lisa Como, or on our Facebook page. We'd love to hear from you. You can find all our social media links on our Blog Talk page and on our radio website, www.ewnradionetwork.com. Well, what do we have for you in store this hour? Well, at this time of year, you always get two things, and they're usually lists: reflections and predictions. Reflections I refer to as the, quote, best of list. It kind of reminds me of Casey Kasem whenever he does his weekly roundup on songs growing up. Yeah, now I'm aging myself. Well, it's usually performance related, whether who topped the charts in music, news, fashion, you get where I'm going. Then there's the prediction list, and that usually happens right after Christmas. That's where we have experts who predict for 2016, which are usually what's going to happen in the stock market, Hollywood, movies, trends, who will have a breakout year. And given this time of year for our news articles, it's not uncommon where multiple lists or awards come out in 1 week, which is what we have. So this week is one of those weeks. In addition to women in the headlines, which we'll give you, we will have women who made the news in some of the bigger headlines. Time magazine announced their person of the year, and it was finally a woman after 29 years. Forbes released its highest paid women in music, and these ladies are bringing home a lot of bacon. And ESPNW announcing their Impact 25 list. This is the annual list of who's who of women athletes and influencers in the world of sports. This is a big deal. And Marvel, actually, it's really cool what they did. Marvel actually partnered with them to do somewhat of a superhero series and did a lot of animation on them, which I think you'll enjoy. So we're going to bring that to you as well, and we will talk about that. But first, we will give you an update on women who made the headlines this past week. On the global front, women leaders are at the forefront. We're going to bring another update on Brazilian President Dilma Rousseff down in South America. The Brazilian president has been very front page noteworthy as her opposition has begun formal impeachment proceedings. Fortune, New York Times, Financial Times, Wall Street Journal, Newsweek all have ran articles on her struggles. Guardian's post, Dilma Rousseff's fate as Brazil's president could hinge on her political enemies. That's a long, long title. It ran a very good summary on this week's changes. Quote, for 25 years, Brazil's biggest political party has made and broken governments, patiently profiting from patronage without ever taking an ideological stance or an overt leadership role. The article goes on to state, but with the country now in the midst of a political and economic crisis that Dilma Rousseff's party helped to precipitate, elements in the king-making Brazilian Democratic Movement Party are finally pushing their own claim to the throne. Senior members of the Portuguese party PMDB officially began support for an impeachment against President Dilma Rousseff. She is still favored to survive, but the odds for her impeachment have narrowed in the past week as her PMDB party support has started to crumble. On Monday, and we're seeing a lot of this in some of the other updates, there was somewhat of a talent exodus. Her aviation minister, Eliseu Padilla, resigned. Then on Tuesday, her VP, Michael Turner, was revealed to have sent what reads like a breakup letter to Rousseff, in which he complained of being given only a decorative role, and that was leaked to the media. And I'm sure it wasn't leaked. I'm sure it was intentional. Well, it's anyone's guess right now, as the largest country in South America and the first South American country, the second South American country to have a female president. She's going to fight for her top leadership position while the economy continues to take a beating and struggle. I don't think that Dilma Rousseff is going to come out of the news anytime soon, but we always want to give you a good update since she is one of the most powerful women in the world. We're going to move up north to Europe. More backlash from the Paris attacks, as the politics in France have also been profoundly impacted by the largest massacre on French soil since World War II. In similar reactions here in the U.S., and this is important, we obviously are still suffering from the San Bernardino attack last week by Islamic terrorists. The French are also in the midst of an election cycle as well. Well, the impact of the terrorist attack in Paris is having a tremendous influence on the voters, very similar, again, to what we're having here in the States. Well, what's interesting, though, is we don't hear a lot about it because we have a lot of our own garbage that we have to fill our news waves with in regards to some of the politics. And I call it garbage because you can tell I'm irritated. Elaine Gangley of the Associated Press penned an article today, and it was just this morning, so we had to change our feed. It's called Fresh Face Star of France's Far Right is a Candidate of Steel. Now, the reason why we pulled this article and changed our lineup is, number one, it's two very prominent women in politics in France that are moving up. And they're related. She's the youngest French lawmaker, and in an election this weekend, she could also become the youngest French president of a powerful region. Her name is Marianne Michel Le Pen. She's 26, and she is a rising star of the far-right National Front, France's conservative party in what would probably be considered somewhat similar to our Republican Party. She is known for using a soft touch to deliver hard messages on migrants and Muslims that outdo her tough-talking aunt, who is the party leader, Marine Le Pen. The younger Le Pen is a golden girl with long blonde locks running in southern France, and she appears undaunted. She has a soft voice, posed demeanor, but she lambastes the nation's top politicians. She once took the floor in Parliament to castigate the Prime Minister's, quote, brainless contempt of her party. Seriously, she said that. She derides France's policy on migrants and tells Muslims that they must conform to France's Christian tradition if they want to be citizens. She's quoted by one of the articles actually called her a woman of velvet with a character of steel. France's party, the National Front, the Conservative Party, and its members love Marisol Le Pen. They have voted her so far to top committee elections a year ago in subcommittees and over party heavyweights that included folks that had a lot of tenure. One of them happened to be the running mate for her aunt. But despite the family ties and far-right bent, much separates the two Le Pen women, and we want to spend a little bit of time on them because we think we should be educated and informed. Their personality and their style and their political messages are very different. Some of the differences also reflect the regions they are contesting. Both have significant Muslim populations. That's an interesting thing. The older Le Pen, Marine, the party leader, she's 47. She's worked to scrub away the stigma from a party that for decades has been known as a political pariah. She owns the stage when she delivers her message of change to the northern lands where she is running, the poorest region of France and a bastion of the governing Socialist Party. I've listened to her. I don't understand French, but she definitely has presence in the way she delivers her message. The younger Le Pen appeals to both Catholic traditionalists and the radical identity movement that is thriving in the South that is trying to keep France French. Dishing out that message, the younger Le Pen has vowed that as head of her southern region, she would cut funds to, listen to this, she would cut funds to Planned Parenthood groups and associations representing Muslims. Also sound familiar. This is what the Le Pen said that is, I think, far more radical than what Donald Trump said. Quote, we are not a land of Islam, she said at a rally. Muslims can be French citizens only on condition that they bend to the customs and the way of the life that the Greek, the Romans, and 16 centuries of Christianity fashioned. End of quote. That's pretty strong. Both niece and aunt are riding the wave of conservative sentiment that has gained quite a bit of support given France's tumultuous year. They've had a really bad year. They had the Charlie Hebdo attacks earlier in spring, and now the Paris massacre, all linked to Islamic terrorists. So while we here in the States hate Trump, the French have the two Le Pen politicians saying the same thing. Notice the big difference. One has less global media coverage and hatred. Interesting. So, as we're talking about Trump, let's bring it back to U.S. politics, which frankly, I'd rather not. And I would like to sleep on U.S. presidential politics for the next 4 months after the dust settles. And, you know, wouldn't it be great to see if we could have like a UFC-type event for the next debate, you know, with a cage, and see who emerges still standing? I mean, I literally have this vision. We could stack rank who was the most successful, who was bloodied the least, who still is standing. I think I could envision how this would look. That would be great. But I digress. Back to U.S. politics, unfortunately. The media, the politicians, and everyone in between continues on the competition of who represents American principles the most. Who is the most American? Who is the most un-American? Yada, yada. Anything meaningful to update you on? Actually, no. We decided to scrub a lot of those updates. We still have two women running for their party nomination, and we still have one woman as the likely winner for her party, Hillary Clinton. And if I gave you any updates, I would just be bogging you down on the garbage you're already seeing on your Twitter and Facebook feed. So before we go to break, we will at least give you an update on the most powerful woman in the U.S., and no, it's not Hillary or Oprah or Katy Perry. It's Janet Yellen. The U.S. Federal Reserve Chair, also the first female in history, has been giving most of Wall Street a heart attack for the last year as we wait with bated breath on the Fed's decision to finally raise interest rates after this seven-year drought. Nearly 7 years ago, the Fed put its benchmark interest rates close to zero as a way to bolster the economy. See how that's been going? And for months now, officials have said that they might raise rates by the end of 2015. I mean, talk about teasing. Recent statements underscore an intention to act at their final meeting of this year in December. Well, the Fed is expected to meet next week on December 16, and while investors and the world markets alike await the decision, every financial news outlet and publication will have a lot of white space to fill as analysts provide their input on what the impact for the December 16th rate hike will look like. It is highly likely that there will be a rate hike, but with a quarter point rate hike, it really is meaningless. But I do call out CNBC's funny piece by John Molly titled, quote, "The 12 Days of Fedmas," which is really a spin on the 12 Days of Christmas song. For you Wall Street junkies like me, this is kind of funny. For those of you that think that this is just geeky, it is, but let me read it to you. And it's dedicated to Janet Yellen. During each of the 12 trading days before the Federal Reserve's interest rate hike on December 16th, CNBC Pro is highlighting a single strategy that should work if the central bank rates hikes, as many on Wall Street expect. We found these trades using Kensho, a powerful tool used by hedge funds to analyze historical market data. In the holiday spirit, we will call this series the 12 Days of Fedmas. Thursday marked the ninth day, so we've added another line, 9 Halliburtons. On the ninth day of Fedmas, Janet Yellen sent to me 9 Halliburtons, 8 Northrop Grumman's, 7 Socks of Swimming, 8 ETFs of Leverage, 5 Goldman Sachs, 4 Lincoln Nationals, 3 ETNs, 2 General Motors, and a pair trade in currencies. Did it pretty good, didn't I? Nice? No. Yeah, we should go to break. So something better than our U.S. presidents in their bar fight updates. I thought that would be a great way to end and go to a commercial. So let's go to break. More women in the news, our hashtag Super Squad superheroes, and more when we return.
I'm looking for a certain kind of woman, and I think you know her. She's an entrepreneur that is highly connected, successful, significant in her own industry, and considered the go-to woman in her community. She's received so much from so many women in business, she's ready to give back to others on their journey, lifting as she climbs. Hi, this is Sandra Yancey, and I'm the founder and CEO of eWomen Network. I'm looking to connect with the woman I've just described who lives in your community so that we might have a conversation about how eWomen Network's proven success system can provide her a platform to elevate her success and ability to support women in business. Our international community of managing directors are influencing the speed of success for women in business around the world. If that sounds like something that you want to be part of or know someone we should talk with, send an email to managingdirector@ewomennetwork.com. That's managing director at eWomenNetwork.com, and let's start the conversation.
Did you know banks decline more commercial loans than they approve? In fact, national banks approve less than 20% of all business loans submitted. And that doesn't include the loans that don't even qualify. But at Interpares Capital, we are here to overcome those odds. We are a nationally recognized commercial brokerage firm with access to thousands of public and private lending institutions. That means we have more options to finance you than your bank does, whether you are a startup or in need of debt refinancing or growth capital, we can help. We do the heavy lifting so you can focus on running your business. Contact us today for a free consultation with one of our business advisors at 855-365-1930. At Interpares Capital, we are your business partner in finance.
You're connected to the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome to the Power Lunch on EWN Radio Network. Your Power Lunch Hour keeping you informed of women in the headlines and making their own news. And now here's your host, Mona Lisa Como.
Welcome back to the Power Lunch. I'm your host, Mona Lisa Como. Our show is sponsored by Interpares Capital. When you need financing for your business or real estate, contact the advisors at Interpares Capital. Well, before we went on break, we talked about quite a bit on what was going on the world front. Now, one of the things that does plague us sometimes when we do our podcast is we try as much as possible to see if we could do a lot of the research prior, kind of bring all of that together for the end of the week. Now, sometimes, unlike in today's one of those days, where we have so much newsworthy items that hit that morning that it requires us to kind of change midstream. So we added a lot of content that we normally probably should have added towards the end of the week, but given it's the end of the year, there would have just been so many things that could come up, being that it's the holidays and some of the bigger news that are pending to break by the end of the week. So that's my caveat. And the reason for that is because yesterday, it was fresh off the news, there was another announcement about a baby. And last week we mentioned the Zuckerbergs announced the arrival of their baby Maxima. Well, Silicon Valley is having a baby boom, and it's a girl, twin girls, for Marissa Mayer and her husband Zachary Bogue. The couple have a toddler son, but the embattled CEO just announced yesterday morning the birth of her twin daughters. Marissa has been under large scrutiny, enough to make anyone go into labor. I know that's a little hard to say, but seriously, if you were in Marissa's shoes, I think I'd go into labor. There's been much media and analyst scrutiny about Yahoo's board to make changes by removing Marissa Mayer. And in fact, there's been so much media coverage on her that she's almost the Donald Trump of Silicon Valley updates. And I will stop bringing up Donald Trump again, but it's interesting. That's how much coverage she gets. A few things that are different and really unfortunate, though, in this week's barrage of articles, which is why we bring it up today. To give you a flavor, here are the headlines, just if you do a Google search. RE Code, their headline was, "My two-decade love-hate relationship with Yahoo." Okay. Fast Company, who's usually generally balanced, their headline was, "Talent Exodus is just the latest headache for Yahoo." This was announced an hour before we went live. Yahoo just lost their chief product officer. Forbes headline, "Can Yahoo survive its current form?" USA Today, Yahoo stock value owes more to Jerry Yang than Marissa Mayer. And Chicago Tribune, the nicest of them all, "Marissa Mayer is a role model. Now show her the door." Well, when Mark Zuckerberg had his baby last week, it was a very different welcome. The world fell in love. Much of that may also have been because he donated 99% of Facebook shares to charity, but I think that it's a little bit more than that. If he didn't, there would still be a love fest with Mark Zuckerberg's baby. Last week, if you remember, Mark did a great thing by announcing that he was going to be taking a 2-month paternity leave to take care and be a part of his daughter's first few months. He then announced that he would give that same benefit to all of his employees, increasing it to 4 months paid leave for all Facebook employees. Well, many other Silicon Valley firms followed in tow, and of course he received a resounding reception. Google is giving 18 weeks maternity and 12 weeks paternity. Microsoft is leading the way with 12 weeks for their employees, and Netflix is giving up to 16 weeks. So first off, let me say, I applaud this move by Zuckerberg, leading the way for Silicon Valley and for all organizations, to be fair. Going back to Marissa, though, she just announced the birth of her identical twin daughters, yesterday morning. Folks, it's not even been 24 hours. It's been a week since Mark's baby Maxim arrived, and the media is still gushing over his baby. The news articles on Marissa's, a stark contrast, are lukewarm and tepid at best. Most outlet headlines were simply, quote, Marissa Mayer gives birth to twins. And we waited a bit to see, okay, well, maybe it was a surprise because they had been writing articles all week bashing Marissa Mayer, so maybe they needed to catch up because they had other articles they needed to delete. So we waited till this morning to see if there were any other articles like, you know, welcoming Marissa and congratulating her on the birth of her twins. No such luck. There was an insightful article, though, by Washington Post this morning right before our broadcast. It was titled, quote, Marissa Mayer's Twins, Mark Zuckerberg's Daughter, and the Humanization of the CEO role. And this is a very good article, and I would encourage you to take a look at it. We're going to tweet it out here after the podcast, and then you'll also see it on our Facebook and Twitter and the Google Plus pages. It's a very well-written article about the challenges of CEOs to effectively be superhuman in terms of being able to balance personal and professional, but then also don't be too superhuman because then that makes you unrelatable. It's, again, very well done article. We just read it before we went live, and we'd hope that you would read it as well. So the biggest criticism this week from Marissa Mayer, undoubtedly, and for her day-old twins, is her decision to only take 2 weeks off from maternity leave. Yes, folks, just two. And for perspective, Marissa announced this, I would say maybe a few months ago when she had announced that she was pregnant to begin with. So that was a bit of a shock because she didn't make her pregnancy known until, I think, after the fifth month. So that was just a few months ago. And then she also announced at the time, because she was in the midst of still getting criticism, that she would only take 2 weeks. Well, the personal decision by Marissa to limit her leave to only 2 weeks is a no-win situation for her. Let's be frank about that. First, she is battling for her job as CEO, and she has been since she first announced she was pregnant with her first child. If you remember and go back a few years ago, when Marissa was pregnant with her first child, she was criticized by women for not taking a full maternity leave because she had also announced that she wasn't going to take a full 6 weeks. And Wall Street and analysts, mainly men, criticized her timing of having a baby because, you know, they think that she should time having a baby with the company's stock price. I don't know. But they also were questioning her ability to lead an organization, which, you know, really chaps my eye that when people ask, well, you're pregnant, can you still work? It's as if women can't chew gum and be pregnant at the same time. Well, so Marissa's faced quite a bit of that kind of negativity, but also sexism that still, I think, a lot of women plague. But deja vu, here we are again. The difference this time is the backlash she is facing in light of the love fest that Mark Zuckerberg's paternity leave decision is having. So let's weigh this out. Mark Zuckerberg, he's a billionaire and independently wealthy. For God's sakes, he gave away 99% of Facebook shares. He didn't need it. Marissa is not. She's doing well, but there's only, you know, maybe like 50 people in the world that are Mark Zuckerberg wealthy. The media and investors are not standing outside his door asking for him to resign. But then there's the implication of leadership. Fast Company's Lydia Dishman posted an article this morning, again, another article that we had to quickly scan, and this one's titled, quote, What Marissa Mayer's Maternity Leave Decision Means for Working Parents at Yahoo. So this really narrows down or hones in on the thought that the Washington Post article really kind of highlighted at a high level, and then Fast Company is really honing in on it specifically in regards to leadership at Yahoo. The article articulates the notion of leading from the front and that employees are less inclined to take vacations, balance their time between personal and family, and won't do so effectively when their leaders don't lead from the front and do the same, which, by the way, I agree wholeheartedly. And that's the rub. I've been in Marissa Mayer's shoes, literally. As a mother of five, four of which I gave birth to, the first child was a two-week maternity leave because I was the first person to have a child at that company, and it was a startup in Silicon Valley back in the late 90s. And then the next three children, we were on a fast-growth company pace, next speed, and I was trying to rise my career, and nobody else around me was having babies, nonetheless the men having families. So it was very, very difficult. So I can understand the notion of wanting to do both at the same time and not coming out a winner on either. And by the way, none of the qualities that I mentioned to you I'm proud of, nor will I ever get Mommy of the Year award. But I do feel like, and I sincerely feel this is the way with Marissa Mayer and Yahoo, that the environment I worked on was not conducive to a woman succeeding and still having a family, nonetheless being pregnant. And I say that. Now, what's interesting is that Marissa's a CEO, and one would say that as a CEO, she can control that environment. I would say not so much in the sense that as much as she has tried to control having an environment where she is the CEO, the environment that criticizes her that she has to contend with are the shareholders who pay for her check and the board. And that's not been a very conducive environment for her to succeed and nonetheless have a family during this time. So while I can empathize with Marissa's battle, it's the leadership at the end of the day that she has to contend with. And unfortunately for her, the critics and the pundits will be waiting eagerly at her door in 1 week in 6 days when she comes out from her 2-week maternity leave. She will be criticized for not taking longer than 2 weeks, and then she will be back at her desk battling the critics and the pundits to keep her job. How about this? Congratulations, Marissa Mayer, and your family. We wish you and your daughters and your son and your husband a very healthy Christmas. We hope you can enjoy it. And at the same token, good luck, honey, when you get back in the seat. And if you need to leave, we are totally there for you because we understand the challenges that you have nonetheless. We're going to move on to other women in business. Sprout. Have you heard of this company? It is not Sprout the Market Store. It's Sprout the drug. The FDA drug approved flibanserin, I'm so sorry I didn't get that right, to treat acquired generalized hyperactive sexual disorder called HSDD in premenopausal women. This is led by a company called Sprout Pharmaceuticals. The CEO is Cindy Whitehead. Well, they're in the news because Cindy Whitehead has decided to step down, and this is a little bit of a surprise. And we pull this from BizWoman. So the FDA finally approves the first female sexual desire drug. And what's interesting about this drug is it's taken a while for it to get approved. It's gone through three FDA approvals. It's gotten the three approvals. The one thing, though, that was a bit of a challenge was that the third approval came with a contingency. And the FDA basically said that there were high risks of severely low blood pressure and loss of consciousness. Loss of consciousness, that's a pretty big deal. And they're accelerated when patients drink alcohol, which is, you know, one would assume woman wants to, you know, take the drug. She's going to have alcohol. Yeah, she can't do that. Well, the other thing about the drug is that it was approved with another contingency that because of the drastic risks in it, that in order for doctors and pharmacies to be able to prescribe the drug, that they had to go through specialized training that the Sprout company would have to put together in order to support the drug. So there was a lot of, hey, congratulations, you got the drug approved. Oh, sorry, you're going to have to spend a lot more money to get people to actually use the drug. One of them is you're going to have to train people and get them certified on how to prescribe your drug. And then the second one is you're going to have to make sure that the risks are fairly well known and marketed. Well, she's stepping down, and it was announced this week that Cindy Whitehead of the Raleigh-based company will step down. And a lot of folks were questioned why she would have stepped down after she had fought so hard to get this drug out there. And it does, the BizWoman says, the timing seems surprising given the approval back in August. Whitehead had a relatively small team of employees. Then her company was acquired, $1 billion, by Canada-based Valiant Pharmaceuticals. I mean, what a coup. Then Valiant Pharmaceuticals, which is normal with acquisitions of startups, was a push to add the roughly 200 people that were required to educate and certify doctors and pharmacies across the nation when her drug Addy would become available. And I think it's called Addy because it's spelled A-D-D-Y-I. Well, it's a little pink pill that's being brought to the market. Next for the drug maker is eliminating the stigma over low female sex drive. Now, I laugh a little bit about this because what it talks about in terms of what the drug does, it, you know, to me it just sounds like a headache. But Janet Woodcock, director of the FDA Center for Drug Evaluation and Research, yay, another woman, said in a statement, "The FDA strives to protect and advance the health of women, and we are committed to supporting the development of safe and effective treatments for female sexual dysfunction." Again, it is called HSDD, Hyperactive Sexual Desire Disorder in Premenopausal Women, and it's when you see a low sex drive. Now, for me, again, I thought that was just called a headache, but apparently there's something for your headache. It's called a pink pill. Haha, was that funny? Probably not. All right, one more thing that we're going to give you. The Avon lady is calling. We think she might be stepping down, but she is definitely going through some struggles. Her name is Sharon McCoy. She is the CEO of Avon, and she was hired a few years ago to really push the company to the next level. Well, North American business, there is advanced talks for the company, for Sherry, to sell Avon to Cerevis Capital Management, reported by the Wall Street Journal. The deal would make the New York-based private equity firm Avon's largest shareholder and could come with some board seats. Sources cited by the Wall Street Journal cautioned that a deal is not guaranteed, but if it does go through, it's expected to happen before the end of the year. Will that mean a very good end of year for McCoy? Not really, considering that the activist group, Cerevis, launched a public campaign last week to turn the company around. In its core arguments, Avon doesn't need a private equity money to recover, and it doesn't need McCoy either. McCoy again came on board 3 years ago specifically to turn Avon around. At the time, the company had just turned down $11 billion takeover in the hopes that it could be saved. But the North American business has been a thorn on Avon's side, the North American line specifically, and sales continue to fall steadily and have continued over the past 7 years. So we're not sure where that's going to happen. I remember growing up with Avon, just don't know in the world of Birchbox and all this other, if Avon can really take it to the next level. I see Avon's brand something like a Sears, unless they can decide how they can modernize their product and really distribute it out, because no one's doing the booklets. You know, they've got to find another distribution mechanism that's going to make them competitive and especially appealing to this next generation. Move on to other women in the news. Mindy Grossman. She is the CEO of Tampa, Florida-based HSN. Well, unfortunately, bad news for them. They laid off about 1% of the 6,900 employee workforce as part of Mindy Grossman's efforts to restructure. Quote, today we make deliberate and strategic internal changes that were necessary in order to continue to stay competitive, maximize operational efficiencies, and optimize growth and create experience for our customers, a company spokesman told the Tampa Times. This is on the heels of quarterly earnings last month that Grossman called disappointing. So HSN did a layoff. We think it's going to make them a little bit tighter. Lastly, Fabian Dattner. That's the last one we'll bring you an update on for this round of updates. She's an Australian entrepreneur, and she is taking a group of 78 scientists on a journey to the heart of Antarctica. Yes, somebody actually wants to go there. This is the first all-female-led expedition to Antarctica, sponsored by the Homeward Bound program, and it'll study the connections of the southern polar region to the rest of the world while learning leadership skills. Now, one of the things that I was taught early in my management career for leadership was the expedition, and it was the first Antarctica expedition, so that's interesting because that's definitely a place to go for leadership. It's the brainchild of Fabian Dattner, a co-owner of a consulting firm who saw a dearth of women in leadership roles, especially in the climate change science. This is a quote from her. I thought what would it be like if I could get them in one place, help them to get state-of-the-art leadership skills? Could we not return to our home base ready to do something differently to the world? She had told the Sydney Morning Herald. Well, while spending 20 days at sea, the women will work together to find solutions to climate change. The scientists come from all disciplines and will use their diverse skills to look for innovative ways to reverse the effects of climate change. The women will also benefit from each other, learning how to lead more effectively in the hope that they will take on bigger roles when they return. The ultimate goal is to involve up to 1,000 women in the program over the next decade. That's absolutely wonderful news. I will not be going there because I don't like cold to begin with, and Antarctica would just see me disappear. That's all we have for this segment. When we return for the next half hour, more women in the news, especially who are the Impact 25 women superheroes. More when we return.
Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. One of my mottos for business owners is, you can't do it alone. Whether you're in the startup stage of your business or you're scaling, you can't grow without relationships to provide support, wisdom, and new customers. eWomen Network is your home to connect with other women entrepreneurs who have been where you are or are experiencing the same challenges. We have chapters across the U.S. and Canada that have monthly events featuring our trademarked process called Accelerated Networking to ensure you get the contacts, resources, and leads you need to grow your business. And once you become a member, you get many benefits, including 2 one-on-one coaching sessions, unlimited access to our membership database, your own personal profile page, and discounts on products and services with our business partners such as UPS and American Express Open. Join the eWomen Network community and let us help you live your dream. For details, visit eWomenNetwork.com.
Did you know banks decline more commercial loans than they approve? In fact, national banks approve less than 20% of all business loans submitted. And that doesn't include the loans that don't even qualify. But at Inter Pares Capital, we are here to overcome those odds. We are a nationally recognized commercial brokerage firm with access to thousands of public and private lending institutions. That means we have more options to finance you than your bank does, whether you are a startup or in need of debt refinancing or growth capital. We can help. We do the heavy lifting so you can focus on running your business. Contact us today for a free consultation with one of our business advisors at 855-365-1930. At Inter Pares Capital, we are your business partner in finance.
You're connected to the EWN Radio Network.
She's smart. She's successful. She's an executive. She's an entrepreneur. And she's the chief executive of her story. Who is she? She's you. Welcome to the Power Lunch on EWN Radio Network, your Power Lunch Hour keeping you informed of women in the headlines and making their own news. And now here's your host, Mona Lisa Como.
Welcome back to the Power Lunch. I'm your host, Mona Lisa Como, sponsored by Inter Pares Capital. When you need business loans, go to the experts that have access to more than hundreds of different lenders and investors, www.interparescapital.com. Well, welcome back to the last half hour of our show. We still have a lot more great women in the headlines that we should bring you. We're first going to go to the women in Broadway and the women in Hollywood. There was a lot of great announcements this week. The first one we're going to focus on is something that's near and dear to my heart. My daughter, being an avid supporter of theater, has really opened my eyes to the challenges for women in that industry. Makers just published an article this past week that we also had retweeted out. It's called The New Broadway Musical That's Making History for Women. An upcoming Broadway musical will be making history for women. The musical, The Waitress, will become the first musical on Broadway to have an all-female creative team. Traditionally, four people consisting of a book writer, choreographer, composer, and a director form a musical's creative team. Waitress will be composed by Sarah Bareilles, directed by Diane Paulus, choreographed by Lauren Lataro, and will be turned into a book by Jesse Nelson, this making it the first of its kind on Broadway. Paulus was interviewed by The Hollywood Reporter and said, quote, "This is a historic and long overdue moment for Broadway, and I'm honored to be working alongside such passionate and inspiring women." According to The Interval, which is a website trying to raise the media profile for women in theater, it found that only 11 plays made it to Broadway last season, and only one was written by a woman, and just four were directed by women. Only one of the 10 new musicals was directed by a woman, and all five musical revivals were helmed by men. The musical, which is an adaptation of the 2000 film by the same name, starring Keri Russell, will take the stage in March of 2016. Its lead role will be played by Tony Award-winning actress Jessie Mueller. The musical tells the story of a waitress who is a pie maker living in a small town in an unhappy marriage. After an unexpected pregnancy, she fears that she will have to neglect her dream of opening her own pie shop, but with help, she gets the chance of chasing her dreams. Previews of Waitress will open at New York City's Brooks Atkinson Theater on March 25th, 2016. So very excited to see that and also bring you news next year when it actually launches. Another big deal that happened this past week is the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. honored and celebrated three extraordinary women. The Kennedy Center's annual gala, held annually in Washington, D.C., celebrated the lifelong achievements and contributions from men and women in the world of arts. This year's 38th annual celebration included six honorees, three of which are women, and one of which is a maker, because this is from Maker's Woman. Singer-songwriter Carole King, actress and singer Rita Moreno, and actress and Broadway legend Cicely Tyson were all in attendance Sunday night to accept their rewards. Stephen Colbert hosted the star-studded event that included the First Lady and the President. King, who is known for her advocacy work relating to climate change and women's rights, was honored by John Kerry. The Secretary of State said about the songwriter, quote, she is the world citizen. Also among the celebrity crowd was actress Kerry Washington, who heralded Tyson by saying the star, quote, does not merely act, she lives. She delves, she soars, she sings, she vibrates. Groundbreaking actress and singer Moreno was in good company with fellow Latina game changers such as Rosie Perez, Hamilton creator Lin-Manuel Miranda, and Golden Globes winner and Jane the Virgin star Gina Rodriguez. Rodriguez also paid tribute to Moreno later in the evening, and it was sure to capture a photo for herself, Moreno, and fellow Perez fans towards the evening as they created a selfie and tweeted that out on Instagram. They tweeted it out, but also put it on Instagram. Moreno, who is known as the first Latino to win an Academy Award for her role as Anita in The West Side Story, was recognized by President Obama, who called her a leading lady of her era. She was a trailblazer with the courage to break through barriers and forge new paths. Absolutely. Well, congratulations to these wonderful women on their being inducted and honored as extraordinary women for the Kennedy Center Honors Gala. And last but not least, Golden Globe nominations came out. And I don't think people were very happy with how many, and as they should be. We're still struggling for women to be getting nominations in general as compared to men. The Hollywood Foreign Press Association is notorious for its bizarre Golden Globe nominations. But on Thursday morning, the organization may have topped itself in terms of left-field nods and surprising snubs ahead of the 2016, which will be hosted by returning MC Ricky Gervais on January 10th. Now, if you've ever watched any of the Golden Globes hosted by Ricky Gervais, it makes you cringe because of all of the people that he actually does, try to insult as humanly possible. In the television categories, there were surprise nominations, including one for Rachel Bloom for the CW's musical series Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, a feather in the cap for the network, which earned another nod for Jane the Virgin star Gina Rodriguez. Finally, it was somewhat shocking to see Flesh and Bone, the limited-run star series about the dark interior of one ballet dancer, nominated in two categories, Best TV Miniseries and Best Actress in a TV Miniseries for a star, not to mention first-time actress, Sarah Hay. Created by Breaking Bad's Emmy writing winner writer Moira Wally Beckett. Most critics gave the drama middling reviews. The New York Times actually declared it ripe for group viewing and drinking games. I don't think that's actually a compliment. So there was quite a bit of frenzy about the Golden Globe nominations. Lena Dunham, though, decided to take it a step further. She made a major ask of Hollywood female leaders just this morning, actually, and it's also posted in Makers. Need a surefire way to make up in the morning? Well, attend a breakfast with Lena Dunham. Yesterday, the Hollywood Reporter's annual Women in Entertainment Breakfast, which coincides with the release of the Women in Entertainment Power 100 list, the writer, actress, director, and producer took the stage to get things going in a major way. Quote, some girls who grew up in the 90s dreamt of a luxury cruise with NSYNC, but my fantasy has always been a room full of Hollywood power bitches enjoying breakfast foods. Well, if you think about Hollywood in 2015, it has truly been a year when everyone realized that the lack of equality between male and female actors existed. Whether it was Jennifer Lawrence's bold essay in Dunham's newsletter Lenny, to other top actresses like Reese Witherspoon, Amanda Seyfried, and Jessica Chastain coming clean about their salary discrepancies and blatant sexism experiences, women in Hollywood are finally speaking up. You couple that with the article that was written 2 weeks ago in the New York Times about the women in Hollywood and the discrepancies and actually lack of equality between women and men, whether it's in the acting role or even behind the scenes, whether it's directing, producing, choreographing, writers. And so it's interesting to see that that is still an area that women and men are still struggling with, especially as we are seeing more and more women take top nods in major character roles. So the we will continue to see more of that, and there's quite a bit of articles. I'm actually scanning this, the reason I'm stuttering, on whether we can fit any of these other articles that we want to mention. But we'll tweet it out so that you guys can take a look at it as well. We're going to move on to one of my favorite lists for this year. Last week, again, we talked about Forbes had released their most powerful women in sports. Now, I don't know if this is coincidental, if the timing is somewhat coincidental, but ESPNW actually creates what's called the Impact 25 list, and that is the 25 most influential women in sports, whether they're athletes or impact influencers. And so this list really is as wide array as it could come from. And I think they actually did a very good job of picking women in a diverse field of athletics as well as behind the scenes. The other thing that's interesting that I highly encourage you to look at is ESPN and Marvel, you know, Marvel that came out with Ant-Man and the Avengers, they actually created Marvel comic art. The artist created some what these women would look like if they were superheroes, calling it the Ultimate Squad Team. And so hashtag squad is also going out there on Twitter. It's very well done. I have some of my favorites. There's probably Serena Williams, one I really liked hers. Well, let's get to the list. So the impact athletes, we'll go through the women and who they are. There's 25 total. So we'll go from the top of the list because she's my favorite. Serena Williams is tennis champion. Serena Williams is on the list, along with Breanna Stewart, UConn Basketball Player of the Year. Ronda Rousey, breakthrough UFC star, not surprisingly. Olivia Quigley, she's the Special Olympics gold medalist. Carly Lloyd is the U.S. World Cup hero, record-breaking freestyle swimmer and Olympian Katie Ledecky. Lydia Ko, my favorite, LPGA Player of the Year. Chloe Kim is the youngest X Games winter gold medalist, and Erica Enders, NHR Pro Stock champion. On the Impact Influencers list, it is Misty Copeland. She is the barrier-breaking ballerina. She is the first ballerina, African-American ballerina, to ever join the most well-recognized ballerina studio in the United States. Lauren Greenfield, Like a Girl documentarian. Becky Hammon, the NBA assistant coach. Loretta Lynch, U.S. Attorney General, but she's on the list because she is investigating FIFA and her influence in sports. Simone Manuel, history-making NCAA swimmer. Senators Kirsten Gillibrand and Claire McCaskill, leaders in fighting campus assault, a sexual assault. Jessica Mendoza, baseball analyst. Dani Rylan, National Women's Hockey League founder. Diana Taurasi, women's basketball decision maker. Sarah Thomas, the first female full-time NFL official. We reported her in the past. U.S. women's soccer team, FIFA World Cup champions. And Jen Welter, football player and coach. Now, the only person that I disagree that didn't make on the list is Condoleezza Rice. She was just nominated for the Gerald R. Ford Award. So former U.S. Secretary of State National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice, she will receive the Ford Award. It is an honor presented annually by the NCAA to an individual who has demonstrated significant leadership by advocating for college sports. Rice is a member of the College Football Playoff Selection Committee, which is responsible for picking the participants of the four-team playoff that determines major college football's national champion. It also helps them set the matchups for other major bowl games. Condoleezza also serves as the Denning Professor in Global Business and the Economy at the Stanford University's Graduate School of Business, and she previously served 6 years as the school's provost. She was also National Security Advisor and Secretary of State. Rice will receive the award during next month's NCAA convention in San Antonio. So I digress to bring up her acknowledgement because it was just posted today that she was nominated for the NCAA Gerald R. Ford Award. Surprising that she never made the influencers list. Agreed that Loretta Lynch is playing a role for investigating FIFA, but Loretta has not been playing a significant role with sports as long as Condoleezza Rice is, and I don't necessarily believe that she's got to be taken out, you know, for the other. Senators Kirsten Gillibrand and Claire McCaskill love that they're fighting campus sexual assault, but you know, Condoleezza is also doing some great things out there from a political perspective. So that's my only beef with it. I'm also hoping that they're not only selecting based on political views because, you know, sometimes there is a bias that if you're a conservative, generally speaking, that the media or at least the mainstream media wouldn't pick you. Hopefully that's not the case, but hopefully that they will also recognize that next year she should probably be on the list. Going back to the Impact 25 list, they've done a really good job. So a couple of things that you should check out. Number one, get to know the athletes and the women influencers. They do a really good job of giving background on each of them, and we just don't have enough time to go into each one of them. There's also really good videos that they pull together, which I think that they've done a great job in really animating and putting the spotlight on each one of these athletes and influencers, predominantly because if you don't know them, you can actually get to know a little bit about them through these videograms, which really, again, do a great job. So go check it out. It's on ESPN.go.com/ESPNW, and you'll see on the primary page of ESPNW, they'll talk about Impact 25. I really encourage you to give me some of your feedback on who your favorite is on hashtag squad, the ESPN partnership with Marvel to create the ultimate women's superhero team. There's some really great superheroes that if either any of these women athletes would become superheroes, what they'd look like. So check it out on ESPNW.com for more information. And again, we'll tweet it out so that you can follow it as well. We're going to go to a break, and when we come back, more women in the news.
Are you an entrepreneur, coach, or consultant who is tired of constantly searching for the next client? Are you ready to get your expertise out of your head into the world and packaged into a profitable online course that delivers a steady stream of your perfect ideal clients to your door and a steady, predictable source of revenue? Hi, this is Janine Blackwell, creator of Create Six-Figure Courses Virtual Bootcamp, and I've created my own seven-figure courses, and I've walked hundreds of experts like you through the step-by-step of creating and launching a profitable online course. I'd like to invite you to a free online training I'm hosting for you called The 7 Steps to Creating and Launching Your Profitable Online Course. I'm going to show you exactly how to create your course, market your course, and automate delivery of it so you can get your course up and running fast and have it work for you 24/7. You can grab your spot for this free training at www.createmyonlinecourse.com. So join me at www.createmyonlinecourse.com.
Did you know banks decline more commercial loans than they approve? In fact, national banks approve less than 20% of all business loans submitted. And that doesn't include the loans that don't even qualify. But at InterParis Capital, we are here to overcome those odds. We are a nationally recognized commercial brokerage firm with access to thousands of public and private lending institutions. That means we have more options to finance you than your bank does, whether you are a startup or in need of debt refinancing or growth capital. We can help. We do the heavy lifting so you can focus on running your business. Contact us today for a free consultation with one of our business advisors at 855-365-1930. At InterParis Capital, we are your business partner in finance.
You're connected to the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome to the Power Lunch on EWN Radio Network. Your Power Lunch Hour keeping you informed of women in the headlines and making their own news. And now here's your host, Mona Lisa Como.
Welcome back to the Power Lunch. I'm your host, Mona Lisa Como, for the last fourth leg of our segment today. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for listening to our updates. So we've got the much-anticipated and surprising Time Magazine's Person of the Year. And it's been so long since a woman has ever graced its cover that I don't think anybody was expecting this. Time has picked Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, as this year's 2015 Person of the Year. She, a little bit of detail about her. Full name is Angela Dorothea Merkel. She is a German politician and former research scientist who has been the Chancellor of Germany since 2005. She is the leader of the Christian Democratic Union since 2000. She's the first woman trailblazer in Germany to either hold the office as leader of the Christian Democratic Union or as Chancellor of Germany, effectively their president. She was born in 1954. She's 61, born in Hamburg, Germany. Again, she's part of the Christian Democratic Union and married to Joachim Sauer, S-A-A-U-E-R. What we do know about her is that she grew up, and the article on Time does a great job and very detailed coverage of her, is that she is a daughter of a Lutheran pastor in East Germany. The headline of the Person of the Year for Time magazine, they call her Chancellor of the Free World. Angela Merkel's journey from daughter of a Lutheran pastor to de facto leader of a continent. Now, interesting enough, she was the only woman nominated this year, and she had to contend against a very short list of Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, Donald Trump, surprise, Black Lives Matter, Hassan Rouhani, Travis Kalanick, and Caitlyn Jenner. Well, why did it take 29 years? So before we celebrate it, let's kind of understand what the rationale was. And I bring it up mainly because Time actually printed an article at the same time they nominated and picked her as Person of the Year. And it's titled, Behind Time's Person of the Year Cover, the magazine has a long history of asking artists to create time portraits and why it's taken 29 years. So their rationale is that they chose Person of the Year who has the greatest influence, better or for worse. This person has had great influence on the world and the news each year. So their statement is, the process invariably inspires a lively debate. While on occasion we have named groups such as last year's Ebola fighters and even objects such as the computer 1982, we have not named an individual woman since Philippine President Corazon Aquino in 1986. The label of Person of the Year tends to favor people with institutional power, notes Deputy Managing Director Radhika Jones, who oversaw this issue. Quote, in that sense, we're not breaking with tradition. It's a lot easier to make news from an address like the White House or the Vatican, or in this case, the Chancellery. I don't buy that. I think that they probably just screwed up because they didn't realize that they really should have done a better job of trying to see if there were other women that were viable candidates. I would argue that I could come up with a list of women in the last 29 years that had institutional influence based on what Time is saying. I'll go back to, if Corazon Aquino was nominated in 1986 because she was a trailblazer working with the people, I mean, basically what she was trying to do back in the Philippines back in the time, it's no different than what was going on, I would say, with Benazir Bhutto, one of my favorites, and a woman who I think really emulates what the world needs right now, was a progressive Islamic woman who represented her own culture and her own faith and said, I am the face of Muslim, of Islam, I know. And her cover of Parade magazine, Untimely Death, when she was killed in 2007, the cover of the Parade magazine, which was very critical, said, it was a picture of her face, and it said, I'm what the terrorists fear most. And she was killed literally 2 days before that went to publication. So I think that that's nice that Time magazine said that they just didn't have enough women in power. I would argue with them that if it's based on institutional influence, there were women like Condoleezza Rice or women like Janet Reno or women like Madeleine Albright who in the world had some significant influence. Madeleine Albright was the first woman Secretary of State. Why couldn't she have gotten nominated? So anyways, that's off my soapbox. I think it's great that they actually have an article titled Why It's Been 20 Years Since a Woman Was Person of the Year. And then they end it, great article, by saying, quote, we likely won't have to wait so long for the next one. That's nice. Maybe just get it right the first 39 years, 29 years. But you know what? Let's look forward. So let's go back to Angela Merkel. What do we know about her? Well, we know that she's fought quite a long fight. And why I think that this is somewhat bipolar in nature is because just last week I was telling you how she had the term embattled, you know, embattled leader. Every article that we could find about Angela Merkel last week, and we had to bring it up because, number one, she's ranked as Forbes' most powerful woman in the world, which she is, and Time has caught up and actually called her Time Person of the Year. But she was being highly criticized, number one, because there's so much chaos going on in Germany. So the fact that Germany is the de facto leader, by virtue of the fact that the strength of the German economy is really the leader of the European Union because the Brits aren't in it and won't ever get in it. So Germany really leads continental Europe in that fashion. The other thing is she's known for taking a stance and going head on with controversial leaders just like Putin. She's probably the only person that has no problem showing up on his front doorstep and telling him what she thinks. And vice versa. He loves to tell her what he thinks as well. So there's quite a bit of controversy as to the strength of her tenure and what's happened to Europe, which, you know, we can go back and forth on that. What I find interesting is that last week, media was sitting there berating how she was a horrible leader. I mean, it honestly looked like you could have replaced Marissa Mayer's name with Angela Merkel's this past week. It was like one, like, swapped out on how they said, you know, the destruction of Germany has fallen underneath her, the economy is all her fault. I mean, you name it, it was out there. And then she gets picked as Woman of the Year. And then all of the article headlines change again to go back to how great she is. And, you know, while we're critical of her, you know, you have to understand we're critical because we have to be. But, you know, we always knew Angela Merkel. No, folks, you didn't get it right. I mean, you guys are bipolar at best. You don't know who you want as a leader and what you want that leader to look like. Again, my soapbox. I apologize for that. So if you look at the articles even a little bit later, just most recently, The Telegraph just posted one that's probably now gravitating more towards the critical nature, titled Angela Merkel is Doing More Damage to the Future of the West Than Donald Trump. Another nice one is, you know, Meet the Refugee Who Named Her Baby After Angela Merkel. The Chancellor of Germany is undoubtedly going through quite a bit of struggles internally as she's putting her neck on the line by being the leader of the world when it comes to dealing with the Syrian humanitarian crisis. Unequivocally, she's leading that charge. To counter that, though, she's not getting the support of her own country, who feels that, in large, much to what's happening in France, and you're seeing the revolution, it's probably a strong word, but you're starting to see the backlash of the very conservative wing of French politics now taking charge because of the radical Islamics. Now you couple that with what's going on with Angela taking the lead again and bringing most of the refugees to Germany. And her folks, you know, the German public has been, I think, tolerant. But I don't know how long that runway is going to last, because what a lot of people want to see out of Angela Merkel, unequivocally, she's very powerful. Unequivocally, she should be person of the year because of the enormous amount of responsibility she has as being leader, effectively, of the world, more so than we are, is that she has to struggle with doing what she wants to do from a humanitarian perspective versus what she wants to do for the voters, the people of her country, who are asking her to pull back. So we'll see how that does for her in the year to come. She's got a year and a half, I think, until the next election. You know, do we think she's going to make it? I don't know, given the way the world of the politics is going right now in the U.S. and France and Germany. I think that it's going to be a tough road for her, but I will say one thing. The fact that she got Person of the Year and it's taken 29 years, well done and well deserved. The fact that she might not make it in the next election will never, ever take away from the amount of great work that Angela herself has done to unify Europe under some very trying times, whether it's the economy and dealing with the Greek economy crisis, or dealing with the issues with Putin and invading Ukraine, or dealing with the issues with the Syrian crisis. Undoubtedly, she's probably dealt with more as chancellor than any chancellor has since the war has come down. So we applaud her. We congratulate her. We think time finally did it right. We're happy to hear that time is going to get it right again and probably look a little bit more critical as to the type of candidates that they throw in. I don't like personally that it is a popularity contest, because based on their criteria, it really is a popularity contest based on the person who's an institution. I mean, if that's the case, Beyonce's an institution. You could have put her on there. That being said, congratulations to Angela Merkel, the 2015 Time Person of the Year. Check it out. It's on newsstands. We'd love to hear what you have to say about it. And hopefully we'll have to see another woman in the next year. That's all, folks, that we've got for this week's edition. We know we will have more women in the news next week because it's continuing to come straight off the press. We want to connect with you. Find us on our social media sites. You can get our links off of our podcast. You can also reach out to us on our website to get our email address to send us any questions that you might have. And if you want to be a guest on the show, we'd love to have you. Have a great week, folks. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks.